We present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the ninth man. The ninth man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Max.
George Dash watched the two men, Richard Kieran and Heinrich Heink, stroll down the steps and stride off towards the subway stop at Grant's tomb. He was a very worried man. He continued to stand there, gazing after them, hands fiddling unconsciously at a button on his coat, until they were a block and a half away. Having to make a decision about what to do next was probably one of the most difficult things he would ever have to do in his life.
Okay, Peter. Let's go.
Go? Where?
To a phone booth.
A phone booth? What for? Who are you gonna call?
The FBI.
But that's madness. You can't... You promised. You said we could talk about it.
This isn't to turn us in. It's a precautionary measure. It's just a call for the record. So if they catch us before we are ready, we can say we already tried.
But we haven't even discussed it with Quirin and Hank.
Looking at them just now. But the way they were dressed... After what I've said to them, do you get the impression they would be prepared to listen? If Hank had his way, they would give us all away before I even have time to make a decision.
I still think it's too soon. We don't have to do it this soon.
Don't worry. I won't tell them much. I won't even use my right name. I'll use the code name for the operation. I'll say I'm Franz Pistorius. That way, I can prove later that it was us that contacted them.
George, do you ever dream of falling? You know what I mean? When everything drops out from under you and you fall and fall and keep on falling?
Yeah, I have dreamt that. But I always wake up before I hit.
Every nut in New York has been on the phone to the FBI since the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. I get driven out of my mind sometimes. Still, I suppose one can never tell.
Oh, that's right. Someday one of these nuts is just liable to pay off.
Yeah, you never know.
I'll see you later.
Yeah. Now, what did he say his name was? Pastorius? Pastorius? Well, what the hell does it matter? Sounded like Pastorius. Re F.D. Pastorius. Memorandum for the file. Please be advised that at 7:51 p.m. on this date, Frank Daniel Pastorius called this office and advised the writer that...
I made a call for the purpose of having a record of it in your office. I, Pistorius, wish to advise that I arrived in New York City 2 days ago from Germany. I cannot reveal my present address in the city, for obvious reasons, at this stage. But I would like you...
He would not reveal his present address in the city. And remained uncommunicative concerning any information that he might be able to furnish to this office. He refused to come to this office and repeat his information. But he wanted this office to record his call. This memo is being prepared only for the purpose of recording the call made by Postorius. P-O-S-T-O-R-I-U-S. Well, hell, that's what it sounded like. Funny name, that. Oh, well, there it is. Yep, here we go again.
The New York office of the FBI was so large and handled so many calls concerning so many different affairs at that time that word of the discovery at Amangenset and the ongoing hunt on Long Island had not yet filtered down into the cubicle of Special Agent Fred Shea. So, in all good faith, he could not be blamed when his mind turned to other things. And for some time, the memo lay dormant, temporarily forgotten by the Bureau in the course of duty. Monday, June 15th, 1942, the third day. It began like any day for Mrs. McKinney, who was, to all appearances, a stout, aging, harmless little woman with friendly eyes and small, helpless-looking hands. As she answered the ninth man's ring at her door, she popped a morsel of cheese and crackers into her mouth and smiled at him, delicately, almost flirtatiously, between her ladylike chews. From what one knows from the details, her appearance must have been almost as naively deceptive to him as his was to her, an error of judgment that was to prove very costly to both of them.
Can I help you?
I've come about the room.
Of course. Come in, come in. I'm Mrs. McKinney.
The name's Daniels. Frank Daniels.
How do you do? The room is on the second floor, $30 a week. You have to clean it yourself, I'm afraid. My girl went off to Shreveport 3 months ago, and I'm beginning to think she's never going to make it back. But she got icebox privileges.
$30 a week? Surely that's a little high.
It is a little high, isn't it? I'm sorry, but it's the standard rate. Housing is at a premium these days.
Yeah, finding that out. I've been looking for a place most of the morning. Nearly everything I've seen has been rented by the time I get there.
Oh, my room would have been too, but I didn't like the looks of the people who came to see it. Married, they said, but I didn't see any wedding ring. Would you like to inspect the room?
Oh, just looking around, this airy foyer tells me I'm going to like it. In fact, I'm sure I will. If it's available, I'll take it.
Very well. I'll get a key. Just come with me back to the kitchen. This way.
Right.
It's quite a big house. Been here quite a long time. It needs a bit of renovating, but it still looks imposing enough.
Oh, yes. Very imposing.
Now, you will be sure to lock up carefully if you come in late at night, won't you, Mr. Daniels? My mother-in-law and I are all alone now, except for Jim and the tenants, of course. Gives me the spooks. If you hear anyone scream in the night, don't worry. It's just me having another nightmare. Better still, on the other hand, I'd rather you did worry. What if it were an intruder? I hope you'd come to my rescue.
Oh, I'm sure I would. What beautiful old chairs these are in the hallway.
Yes, aren't they? Real mahogany. They don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't.
Here we are. Now, the key should be in here somewhere.
Oh, I'm sorry I interrupted your tea break.
Oh, no, not at all. I sometimes enjoy a cracker and cheese at this time of the day. Oh, where the devil... here it is. I was beginning to wonder I hadn't mislaid it. Here we are.
Thank you.
How long will you be staying, Mr. Daniels?
I'm not sure yet. I'd say probably a couple of weeks.
You have someone in the hospital?
I beg your pardon?
A university hospital. Most of my roomers stay here so they can be close to relatives while they're mending. You've got someone there?
No, I haven't. I'm here on business.
Oh, what kind of business? If you don't mind my asking, that is.
Oh, not at all. I'm in the oil business in a minor way, wildcatting down near San Antonio. We've been having a considerable problem getting enough pipe. So I've come up here to see what can be done about our priority rating. Country needs oil nowadays, you know.
Oh, my, doesn't it ever? I wish I was in the oil business. Maybe I could get enough gasoline to keep my old pack car running. Well, that'll be $30 in advance, Mr. Daniels. Unless you want to pay for the whole 2 weeks. I'm afraid I can't guarantee the room past what you pay.
Well, that's all right. I'll pay for 2 weeks. There you are. 20, 40, 60.
Good heavens. What's wrong with this money? It's all wrinkled. Where?
Sorry about that. I ran into a rainstorm in Fort Worth. Got soaked to the skin before I could get back to my hotel.
Oh, poor boy. Well, that's the icebox over there. You just feel free to store your snacks in it. Nobody will bother them. You can take ice cubes out, too, if you want iced tea or cold water. But try not to take more than 4 cubes a day, all right? My mother-in-law practically lives with an ice pack on her brow in the summertime.
I'll be careful.
Now, your room is at the top of the stairs, second door on the left. The convenience is at the end of the hall. Oh, and I hope you aren't addicted to alcohol. My mother-in-law hates drinking in the house.
As a matter of fact, I drink very little.
Oh, well, that's fine. Well, I hope you enjoy your stay with us, Mr. Daniels. Better get on with my ironing. Actually, I just hate ironing, but I can't bring myself to give my tenants wrinkled linen. That's one thing you'll have in my house, Mr. Daniels. Nice, unwrinkled linen once a week.
Thank you. I'll go up now and settle in. Hard-working, but obviously not accustomed to it. Probably a widow, forced by circumstances to rent rooms to make ends meet. Americans are indifferent to widows, like they were to you, Mama. It was indifference that killed you.
Yeah, indifference and hard work.
From Rastatt on the Rhine to Castroville, Texas, and the wee-choked riverbed of the Medina. You were terribly lonely, weren't you?
Yeah. Terribly lonely. That's why I asked your father to bring out Aunt Silke from Germany.
Welcome to the United States, Aunt Silke. Welcome to Castroville, Texas. Welcome to a home that is not a home. The neighbors that look oddly at you as though you don't belong will never belong. Welcome to death, Aunt Silke. Mama's death. Welcome to a depression. No money, no work. There's never enough money. Mama's always dreamed of going back to Germany, to Rastatt on the Rhine.
But there was never enough money. Never enough.
Then there she was, desiccated, dead, deposited under the dried-out earth, buried with father.
She have both gone now. There is nothing to keep us here. We must go home to Germany, to my home. That shall be your home. It won't be easy, but you must work hard. Remember that. Work hard. Never give up. You are going back to the country that spurned you. It will accept you. It will have to accept you. Let there be no doubt. Force yourself upon it. You are German. You have earned your right.
Yes, Aunt Silke. I had earned my right. I had to earn it. It was hard work.
making up the gaps left by the Castroville school system. It was very different in Germany for a long time, until Frankfurt am Main. A fine month of bread and cheese, cheap wine and hitchhiking through France with Hans Joachim, sketchbooks filled with drawings of 15th-century castles, talking of war under the bright stars. You were so cross, Aunt Silke, when I married Gerda, lovely Gerda, Joachim's sister. But I wanted a taste of life, of love, of my country. I wanted to belong. It was war. September 1st, 1939, we marched into Poland. War was declared. I had left Germany, and plump, beautiful, freckled Gerda. So short a time, but it was beautiful while it lasted. Her beautiful, white, soft breasts. No freckles there, Aunt Silke. And I could love her like a bird settling in the nest. Then off to France again in the spring. And after that, to Africa. Africa, dried out earth, sucking out greedily the sweat and strength of our life's blood. Young men in gray uniforms, marching, running, trudging over gray earth, following gray tanks, irrigating the desert with bright blood. How like Texas it was, all over again, the hot, yawning, greedy earth. You could not know, Aunt Silke, what North Africa was like. 2 months locked in mortal combat in the cloudy, dusty desert. British attacking, British retreating. Germans attacking, Germans retreating. Two massive clouds of dust fainting and jabbing at each other, leaving bloody footprints and dried out bodies in their wake, murdering and slaughtering each other in a gentlemanly enterprise for land that was utterly useless. If I hadn't met that officer from intelligence in the desert, perhaps I might have remained there, buried in the sand.
Quite a barrage they are putting up.
Yeah, we could be pinned down here for some time.
I am here as an observer.
Observer?
Yeah, to see how things are really going for the army. Where on earth did you get an accent like that?
In America.
America?
Yeah, I grew up there.
Yeah, what part of the country?
In Castroville, Texas. I went to school there. Had a marked effect on my German.
Yeah, of course, yeah. How could it be otherwise? But you came back to Germany and to fight for the fatherland.
Yeah.
Who knows? There are many ways in which one can serve one's country. Your destiny may not be to die here in the desert.
We survived this barrage. That in itself will be an accomplishment.
Yeah. There have been moments when I have wondered if I shall ever get back to make out my reports. The British seem to be doing their best to wipe us out completely. This must be one hell of a battle. If we live, you might hear more about this.
Yes, everything seems to have gone the full cycle. Germany, America, back to Germany. France, Germany, Africa, Germany, back to America. Circle. Imperfect, wobbly, but a circle. Back to my old home, which is no home. Back to where I started. But this time, it'll be different.
When he moved into Mrs. McKinney's house, I figure he must have taken the oilskin-wrapped gun from his waistband, laid it on the coverlet, then opened his shirt and unbuckled the money belt. I guess that's what I would have done. Being a thorough professional, he broke the gun down, removed the barrel, barrel extension, and hammer mechanism, wiped everything carefully before reassembling, then checked the stubby silencer and clips of ammunition. The notes were another problem. He emptied the money belt on the bed, spilling stacks of 20s, 50s, and 100s on the covers. It must have been difficult counting the money into neat stacks. The paper bills were badly rippled and warped, like the pages of a magazine that has fallen into a bathtub.
I shall probably have trouble passing them. Perhaps I can borrow the landlady's iron later and press them back into shape. Why did they give me so much money, I wonder? All I needed was a few hundred. Enough to keep me going until I'm ready to summon Dash and Curling. After that, money to me will be practically superfluous.
He carried the money, along with the Mauser, over to a chest of drawers in the bedroom and put them in one of the lower drawers. Then opened up a top drawer and deposited his packet of false papers, cards, and identification papers. They were quite impressive and would cause us no end of trouble in the days to come.
Morning, sir.
Morning. Carry on.
Sir.
Sir.
You down there. Move off from under that tree. Get on with doing your rounds. What do you think this is? A lounge's paradise?
You okay? Sorry, Sergeant.
Well, well. Have a bad night?
I overslept. Any business?
Yep. Sun coming up for Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
3 VIPs from the Pacific for medal ceremony. A couple of war heroes and a public relations escort. They'll need passes to the war room.
Did General Burr's okay?
Well, sure. Yeah. If there's a chance he'll get his picture taken, he'll okay anything.
Hmm. Anything else?
Oh, that damn lieutenant again. Kid from Harvard.
Uh-huh.
One of the non-coms caught him goofing off in the library. It's the third time he's wandered off on duty. You better tell him if he doesn't straighten up, we're going to ship his backside off to Australia.
Yeah, I'll talk to him. I'll escort the VIPs to the war room myself. What time do they do?
Oh, between 10:30 Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can take him. You're supposed to leave for the war conference at Hyde Park that day.
I'll have time.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a cocktail party for the two heroes tomorrow night. I think you want to go to that, too.
Oh, tomorrow? But that's my last night. I'd better stay home and pack.
I think you'd better go. Give you a chance to buttonhole General Burrs and some of the other chiefs. You're going to have to do some smarming and get us some help. That damn Calhoun is sticking it in our ear again.
Oh, hell. What's he done this time?
Oh, he sent out a sheaf of new memos this morning. Security arrangements for the Hyde Park conference. I got it from one of the girls in the secretarial pool. She did the routing.
So? Well, he's a Secret Service expert. That's his job.
Yeah, but he left us off the list again. Yeah, the memos went directly to the war room. I know. I checked the routing list.
Do you think he did it on purpose?
Damn right he did, the SOB. I did it 3 days running last week, too. He knows it hits us where it hurts.
Look, is it really so important that we get copies of his memos?
Yes, sir. It's a matter of protocol. We're the security liaison, not the damn secretarial pool. If we let him get away with nonsense like that, we might as well shut up shop.
Yeah. Okay, I guess you better speak to him. Tell him our copies have apparently been misdelivered and asked for duplicates.
Not me. What? I complained the last 3 times. It's your turn, Captain. Get tough with him.
Looked as though my assistant at the White House, Sergeant Huffman, was right. But the last thing I wanted to do was to start an internal feud. There were times when I wished for a slightly more tactful hand, particularly with all the touchy command rank officers who wandered in and out seeking security passes. But at the same time, there was no way I could handle the job without the sergeant's expertise. I only wished he would relax sometimes and shake the chip off his shoulder. But he really knew the ropes. He was career military. A thin, wiry little man with tiny feet and tiny hands. He made up what he lacked in size with military bluster. Supercharged with energy, he fought off the rest of the world with a frenzy that made our section his own personal battlefield.
That was Episode 6 of The Ninth Man by John Lee, adapted and directed for broadcasting in 25 parts by Victor Mackeson. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.